Amen. What a powerful name. The name Jesus is the one that should be on our lips at all times, especially during this season, the Christmas season. I want to welcome all of you guys, all of you ladies, all you children, to Catalyst Christian Church. This is my favorite time of the week. I look forward to Sunday mornings more than just about any time of the week. I love being here with you all, and I hope that you all are enjoying this as well. This has been a phenomenal year for us here at Catalyst. 2018 is probably the best year we've ever had. From just people engaging in the mission of the church, from giving to people being here, to doing outreach, to just everything. This has been a phenomenal year for us, the best in our 10-year history. And so this theme that we've had this year of community, developing community. I don't know if you guys were here when we did our fall kickoff. I hope that you were, but basically what we decided, the Lord told us that if we really want to do discipleship, we really want to grow people into the kind of people Jesus wants them to be, people have to be here for a long time. You have to have long-term friendships. You have to get to know people. You have to engage with people. And that's been our whole push this whole year, is to develop lifelong friendships, to build community, and by doing that, keep discipleship going. And my community group has just been such a blessing to me. I hope that yours has too. And it's just been a phenomenal year. So as we kind of draw this year to the close, we have so much to be thankful for. The Lord has been good to us this year. And so today we're finishing up our series on the Great Commission. The Great Commission, we've been talking about 3 weeks ago. Rob preached about going to all the world. Then 2 weeks ago, John talked about teaching them to obey, making disciples. And then Rob last week talked about baptism, baptizing in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And I have the pleasure of getting to kind of wrap it all up. What did Jesus mean when he gave us a Great Commission? Well, the main thing that today Randy said is that intimacy happens when we are committed to the same thing Jesus is committed to. All right, I want you all to think about the people you are closest to. Maybe some people in your family, maybe some friends, old friends. Think about maybe friends you've had for a long time. Who is it that you enjoy being around? Who are your best friends? It's very, very simple. It's the people you have the most in common with. It's very, very difficult, extremely difficult, to be friends with people that you have nothing in common with. I don't know if we just came through the Thanksgiving season. Maybe you had some relatives there at Thanksgiving that, you know, if you weren't really related, you wouldn't really see each other. You wouldn't be friends. You wouldn't hang out. You just don't have anything in common with them. Right? I mean, that's the way it is. Even if you're family, if you have little in common, you won't be very close. On the contrary, if you have things in common, a lot of things in common, you will find it very difficult not to be friends with those folks. That's because there's a type of love that grows up between two people that are committed to the same thing. We talked about it a couple weeks ago. It's called philos. It's where we get the word Philadelphia. It's a kind of love in the Bible that grows up between two people committed to the same thing. It happens in marriage when people are committed to the same thing. Philos love grows up. It happens in friendships. It happens in family, or whenever you're committed to the same thing, there's a certain type of glue that draws you together. It's called philos love. And same commitments lead to a deep love between people. And we're in a series on the Great Commission. And I had never, ever looked at it this way before. But getting 3 weeks out of the pulpit gives you a lot of chance to study. And so I got alone with this. And we hear all the time about the Great Commission, about go into all the world and make disciples. We hear about that all the time. And make no mistake, that is so important. Many Christians don't know what Jesus wants them to do, does not know that we're supposed to go into all the world and make disciples. A lot of Christians don't know that. We emphasize the action of the Great Commission. But how does the Great Commission end? Well, I'm glad you asked, because I'm about to read it to you. Matthew 28, Jesus came to them and said, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I've commanded you. And surely I'm with you always to the very end of the age." Most of the time, we just kind of blow that "surely I'm with you always to the very end of the age," emphasizing the first part of the Great Commission. But Jesus makes it very, very clear, get this, that our closeness with Jesus Christ is directly tied to how committed we are to the Great Commission. What did he say? He says that when you go into all the world and make disciples, and you baptize, and you teach, and you make disciples, I am with you always. Why is that? Well, very simple. Because when you're committed to the same things that Jesus is committed to, relationship and friendship is going to grow up between you. Plain and simple. See, guys, what we commit ourselves to is what our relationships go towards. I would even say this, that we are the sum total of what we commit ourselves to. We are the sum total of our commitments. Everybody knows that young generations always want to find themselves, right? Everybody's going out to find themselves, and everybody looks the same place, Boulder, Colorado. It's like that's where everybody goes to find themselves, right? And you'd think that with this entire generation of people going to find themselves, someone would find it. Hey, I find myself. You know, I found myself right 10 miles down I-40. I found myself. No, there is no self waiting to be found. On the contrary, people, we cannot find ourselves. We can only create ourselves. And we create ourselves by what we commit ourselves to. All you young people in here, high school, college, and younger, listen to me. You cannot find yourself because there's no self waiting to be found. You can only create yourself in what you commit yourself to. Whatever you commit yourself to is what you will become. And because we are the sum total of our commitments, many of us have committed to things that are either not worth our time, or we have committed to things that are against what the Word of God says. We've committed ourselves to doing things that is completely opposite of what Jesus himself is committed to. And therefore, we have no intimacy with Jesus. Intimacy grows up between two people committed to the same things. And it's time the church starts committing itself to doing the things that Jesus himself was committed to. It's time that we stop committing ourselves to all these things that Jesus couldn't care less about, and we commit ourselves to the things that Jesus himself is committed to. Well, what was Jesus himself committed to? Very, very easy. Very easy. He was committed to the Great Commission. That's what makes him fired. That's what fired Jesus up. Going into all the world and making disciples. He developed 12 disciples and he poured his life into them. He lived out the Great Commission. And that is what fires him up. And that's where he lives and breathes. And people, if that's not where we live and breathe, we're never going to find intimacy with Jesus. You talk to a Christian and you say, you get a Christian and you ask him, what are you fired up about? You say, hey, you like missions? Well, no, not much. Not really into that. You like helping the poor, praying for the sick? Well, nah, that's not for me. Well, you like making disciples, passing on what you know about Christ followers? Well, yeah, I mean, that's cool, but I'm not really doing that. You like winning people to Christ? Nah, that's pastor's job. Yeah, you like teaching people to obey Christ? Nah, that's pretty judgmental. Well, then you say, well, so how's your relationship with God? And he looks at you, that's a funny thing. I don't feel him at all. It's like he's not even there. No wonder you are not committed to the same things that Jesus himself is committed to, and therefore there's no friendship and no intimacy between you. Basically, your relationship with God is like that crazy uncle that shows up at Thanksgiving that no one knows where he lives and no one knows where he comes from and no one really likes him all that much, and he kind of sits there in the chair and you don't really have anything in common with him. You're kind of in the family with him, but you don't really have anything in common with him. That's what a lot of Christians, their relationship with Jesus Christ is. Because we are not committed to the same things that he's committed to. All right? And that's a problem, people, a big problem. And this is why. Because in Matthew chapter 7, verse 21, Jesus says this, "Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father who's in heaven. Many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name, and in your name drive out demons, and in your name perform many miracles? And I will tell them plainly, I never knew you. Away from me, you evildoers." There was no relationship there. Why? Because we weren't committed to the same things Jesus was committed to. Jesus draws a direct line between doing the will of God and knowing God. And you say, well, are we earning our salvation by doing the will of God? No. No, and that's not, we can't earn our salvation. That's not what I'm saying. Don't hear that. It's just that people that engage in the same goals and pursuits know each other. They know each other deeply. And if you want to know Jesus deeply, like he commands us to do, we have to be committed to the same things he's committed to. All right? See, when intimacy grows up between two people committed to the same things, author David Platt writes this, "When people say that they don't feel close to Jesus, I ask them if they're making disciples. After all, his promise to be with us always is directly tied to his command to make disciples." So here's a question. How committed are you to the Great Commission? How committed are you to this amazing gift, this amazing opportunity that Jesus gives us, tells us at the end of the book of Matthew? How committed are you to that? That will be the extent of your relationship with Christ. And when you are committed to the same things Jesus committed to, there are four changes that happen within you. And they're really neat. And I would like you guys to write these down. These are things you need to discuss in your community group. Hint. Discuss these in your community group this week. All right, four changes. The first thing that changes, the first thing that changed within me when I got fired up about the Great Commission was your enjoyment of prayer changes. I have confessed many times from this stage that I am not good at prayer. It is a discipline for me. It does not come natural to me. I check that. It doesn't come naturally to me sometimes. Other times, prayer is very natural for me. I bet you can guess when those times are. Those times are when I am either on the mission field or I am actively engaging people in accomplishing the Great Commission. That's when prayers flow. Just flow from you. You know, and the reason is because prayer is a conversation with God. Let's go back to that crazy relative at Thanksgiving. If you have nothing in common, you really your conversation with that person really isn't going to get far above, "Hey, how's your year? Hey, how you doing? Nice weather we've got outside," right? That's about all you can talk about that crazy uncle at Thanksgiving. Well, let's look at your prayers. Have you ever gotten beyond, "Lord, thank you for this day. Lord, give us a good day. Lord, I pray for so-and-so"? Have you ever gotten beyond that? See, when you are engaged in the Great Commission and you are actively going into the world and making disciples, all of a sudden you've got all kinds of stuff to talk about with Jesus. Then all of a sudden you realize that he's as fired up about you going into all the world and making decisions, making disciples as you are, and you guys have all kinds of things to talk about. "Lord, I need you to pray. I need you to be with this person here because they're trying to kill me, and I need you to change their heart." All of a sudden, your prayer life gets really, really, really kicking and really stomping. I will never forget the time I was over in Nepal, and it was a Sunday morning, and they told me that there's going to be a healing service in Nepal, the backwoods of Nepal. Backwoods. I'm talking backwoods, people. And all of a sudden, these hundreds of people started showing up. And they unfurl a banner with my picture on it saying, "Healing Crusade conducted by David Kibler." And I had never even seen a healing service before, let alone conducted one. And I said, whoa, "I'm doing what?" Says, "You're going to pray for these people and going to heal them." And people are showing up with, you know, with broken legs and people being carried in on mats because they were so sick they couldn't walk. I mean, it's very, very, very New Testament here. And so I ran back to my room, and I got down on my knees and said, "Lord, what in the world are we doing?" Believe me, prayer life was very easy at that point. I was in so far over my head that if God did not come through, I was sunk. I can just imagine standing up there in front of all these people. I'd come all the way from America, and I'd just gotten done preaching the last day, and we baptized several people, and all of a sudden, now nothing's going to happen, and everybody's going to think I'm a fraud because they're expecting. These people are arriving, expecting healing. Believe me, when you're engaged in the Great Commission, your prayer life changes. It becomes more, so much more enjoyable because you and Jesus have so much in common to talk about. All of a sudden, you begin praying for the lost people in your family because you're actively engaged in winning them. You begin praying for your friends because you're actively engaged in winning them. You begin praying for missionaries because you realize what they're doing. You begin praying, and the prayers just flow out of you, and you can hear Jesus talking back, and you guys have a conversation. I'm just telling you, your prayer life completely changes above the "give us a good day, Lord, thanks for this day" prayers. When you are engaged in the Great Commission, because you're committed to the same things. You and Jesus are passionate about the same things. And just like any friend that you have, it's easy to talk to someone when you have stuff in common. I don't know if you know this or not, but this is deer season. Anybody know that? Anybody heard that recently? Yeah, absolutely. You walk into this church, and Eddie, if there are more than three guys in a group talking, they're talking about the deer they got. Conversation flows naturally because we have that in common. And my deer is always bigger than everyone else's. It just really is. Okay? And it's just the way it is. But guys, because you're talking to Jesus, who's passionate about the Great Commission as you are, you've got stuff in common. Like I said, it took me going on my first short-term mission trip to realize this. And I always wondered why my prayer life was so much more radical and passionate when I was on the mission field. Simple. Because I was doing what Jesus thought was important. It was great. We had that in common. Prayers flow for hours, it seems. Like a good friend you have tons in common with, you just never run out of things to talk about. If that does not describe your prayer life, I want to invite you to value the Great Commission. Because that is the best thing I've ever experienced for the enjoyment of our prayer life. The second thing that changes, your enjoyment of the Bible changes. Your enjoyment of the Bible changes. Okay, one of the things that everybody knows here, I'm so passionate about, I love the Word of God. I absolutely love it. But one of the questions I get as a pastor is, I don't understand the Bible. I can't really, I read it, doesn't make sense, everything like that. Well, other than just studying it, I want to kind of let you guys know this. When you and Jesus are committed to the same things, all of a sudden the Bible takes on a whole new life of its own. My freshman year, right before my freshman year in college at Center College, it was the summer before it, all incoming freshmen had to read a book called The Unsettling of America by author Wendell Berry. And Wendell Berry is a Kentucky writer. He grew up in poverty in eastern Kentucky, and he wrote about the unsettling of America. It's a classic. It was back in the 70s, it's been revised many times. And to say this book was boring was the understatement of the year. It was awful. I slugged my way through it. I probably skipped half the pages. Just, my goodness, what is wrong with this guy? It was boring. It was a lot of run-on sentences. It was poorly written. And in my 18-year-old mind, knew better than this guy. To make it worse, when we got to college for freshman orientation, we were broken up into little groups to discuss this horrific book. And everyone in my group was trying to outcompete everyone else. My insights that weren't there. So not only did I hate the book, I hated the discussion of it. It's terrible. I hated the book, hated the discussion of it. In the summer, between my freshman and sophomore year, the next year, I reread The Unsettling of America. And this time, I absolutely loved it. What changed? Well, Wendell Berry was a visiting professor at Center College that year. He was incredible. And unlike most professors, he loved to sit and talk with students. He loved to come into the cafeteria instead of sitting with professors. He would come up to our table and sit with us. And he was just, he's a brilliant conversationalist, easy to talk to, super nice guy. And he would ask us about where we came from. And we would ask him about where he came from. And we found out that he didn't get a pair of shoes till he got into high school. He grew up in abject poverty and the struggles and how he loved the Eastern Kentucky values, the values of Appalachia that he felt were not being passed down to the next generation of community, of family, of faith. And I mean, the guy was an absolute delight to talk to. And when I reread that book in the context of the relationship that I had developed my freshman year in college. It took on a whole new life of its own, The Unsettling of America did. And I would like to suggest that when you know the author of the Bible, when you are committed to the same things that Jesus is committed to and you have intimacy with him, the Bible takes on a whole new life. You read it through a different pair of eyes when you know the author. When you are in Jesus are committed to the same things and philos love has grown up between you, the Bible becomes living and active. All of a sudden, these burdensome commands that you feel laid on you, all of a sudden take on a life. And you realize that God is telling you this because this is the way life works, to make it work. It becomes the most precious thing in your life. You literally can't live without it. It's your bread, your food, your very life, the Bible becomes. Wonderful and pleasing. Its words that seem so difficult to understand all of a sudden make sense. And the commands of Jesus, like I said, so once seeming so burdensome and hard and stringent, all of a sudden you begin to love them like you love the author. And that's what happens when you have intimacy with Jesus. You're committed to the same things he's committed to. The third change that happens is our prayer life. We begin to enjoy our prayer life. Second thing, we begin to enjoy the Bible. The third thing, we begin to enjoy the church. Your enjoyment of church changes. And I really appreciate everybody being here on Sunday morning, man. I love when the family's together. I do. But what's Sunday morning worship for you, if we were honest? What's Sunday morning worship for you? What's community group like for you? What's your reaction when you hear of a mission trip or an opportunity to serve in the church? Is it in one ear and out the other? It is for a lot of us in here. It really is if we were honest. No big deal, not much. Or are those things the driving force in your life? Depends. It depends on whether you're committed to the same things that Jesus is committed to. See, when you have philos love, all of a sudden, when the band starts playing, man, when the band starts playing, you know who that song is dedicated to, who that song is being sung about. You understand who and what we are saying, and worship takes on a whole new aspect. Worship takes on a priority in your life, becomes the given in your week. It's not the exception. It's not the one thing among many. It's the priority, worship, because you're committed to the same things Jesus is committed to. He prioritized worship in the synagogue. Worship was important to Jesus. The Bible constantly talks about Jesus going to the synagogue with his disciples. And the entire church experience takes on a whole new life when you and Jesus have things in common. It's not just a thing to punch. Time card. Yeah, I went to church today. Yeah, I went to church this week. I'm good. No. When you hear the sermon, what you sing in worship, what you give, what you receive, you carry it with you throughout the week. Because church is important to Jesus. And when you're committed to the same things Jesus is important to, you develop intimacy. Listen, you can hear the greatest sermon in the world and not be moved by it. Listen, you can. You can hear the greatest sermon in the world and not be moved by it. Remember that both Peter and Judas heard the exact same sermons. Both Peter and Judas had the same pastor. Both Peter and Judas heard the same words. And one of them, Peter, became the rock that Jesus built his church on. And the other one betrayed him and had him crucified. Why? It's easy. Peter was committed to the same things Jesus was committed to. He was committed to the Great Commission. He was dedicated to the church. He was dedicated to the things that Jesus was dedicated. Judas, on the other hand, he had a political agenda. He wanted Jesus to throw off the Romans, and he saw Jesus as a means to accomplishing what he wanted. And when that didn't happen, he betrayed him, sold him down the river for 30 pieces of silver. And because of that, their experience of church and Jesus' sermons and leadership was vastly different, wasn't it? Didn't have anything to do with the words. Had to do with what the people were committed to. Your enjoyment of church has more to do with what you're committed to than just about anything else. Are we to enjoy church? Yes, we are. But it'll only happen if we're committed to the same things Jesus is committed to. And that's why we here at Catalyst have a policy of Sundays for worship only. That's it. Sundays for worship only. We don't do business. We don't resolve disputes. We don't have meetings. We don't do that. We don't discuss issues. We don't handle complaints. That's what the church office for is for during the week. When we're together, we are here for Sunday for worship only. We're here to worship God. Why don't we do those other things? Well, because when you're committed to the things Jesus committed to, those things don't really matter. You don't have time for it. We're committed to doing what Jesus wants us to do, and you don't let Sunday mornings be hijacked by the things that Jesus isn't committed to. It's a way of guarding our church. And when every person in the world, listen, when every person in the world has heard the gospel, and every person in the church is making disciples, and every missionary is fully funded, and everyone is committed to kingdom work, then we can discuss whether or not the music is too loud or someone's sitting in your seat. Until then, the issues that Jesus doesn't really care about, we're not going to care about. So your enjoyment of church changes when you're committed to the same things Jesus is committed to. And the fourth change that happens, your enjoyment of God's presence changes. The fellowship and the closeness and the intimacy with Jesus becomes precious to you. The Westminster Catechism, which is a statement of faith made by the Church of England in 1646, says this: the chief end of man is to glorify God by enjoying Him forever. How many Christians you know that actually enjoy God? Let me ask that question a little closer to home. How many Christians in here enjoy God? Enjoy His fellowship? How many of you know it's even possible to enjoy God? Well, how do you enjoy God? How can you enjoy His presence? Well, not being committed to anything God is committed to? Simple, you can't. Because we're the sum total of our commitments, because we are, your enjoyment of your faith, the pleasure you take in God, the absolute joy you feel in His presence is directly correlated to the degree that you're committed to the things Jesus is committed to. And the only way to have true friendship with Jesus, the only way to have true intimacy with Jesus is to be as committed to the Great Commission as He is. That's it. That's it. He's told us where He can be found. He's told us where He can be found. He's told us where He can be found. If you are seeking after Jesus, He's told us where He can be found. He's found in the hungry, the thirsty, the sick, the incarcerated. He's found in the orphan child, the foster child, the least of these. Jesus values these people. That's where He said He can be found. Scriptures say He's already there. So go there too. You want intimacy with God? Go where He says He is. Do what He says He's doing. Because you'll be enjoying Jesus, His friendship, His love, because now you have things in common. He values disciple making. You want to have enemies with Jesus? Then go make disciples, because you'll have those things in common. When you just dedicate your life to it, you have things in common with Jesus. And when Jesus says, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only those who do the will of my Father in heaven. And many will say, Lord, Lord, didn't we prophesy in your name and cast out demons? And He says, I never knew you. When He says that, He won't be talking to you. Because He's like, oh, man, there's Larry. Yeah, we talked about the Great Commission all the time. We have that in common. We have this great friendship. And for those of you who say, friends, Jesus isn't our friend. He's the King of kings and Lord of lords. He's King and we're servants. Friends. It's not my line. I take you to the word of Jesus. In John 15:15, I no longer call you servants because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I have called you friends. For everything I've learned from my Father, I've made known to you. And why did He call those disciples friends? Easy. They've been doing the Great Commission for 3 straight years together. And they developed such a closeness and such a friendship because they had that in common that He called the Son of God, the Creator of the universe, called these people friends. Preaching the gospel, making disciples, living out kingdom values, not being conformed to what this world wants of us, but valuing what Jesus valued, they became friends. And that's what Jesus calls us to this very day. That's why He gave us the Great Commission. that we would take on his values, that we prioritize what he prioritizes, but also so that we can grow in friendship with the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Last night, I had a serious case of heartburn. Anybody ever get heartburn? It's just misery, and it always hits at 2:39 a.m. I don't know why. This case of heartburn was so bad, 7 Tums didn't even put a dent in it. To say I was miserable this morning is an understatement. And I went downstairs so I wouldn't wake up my wife. I figured this is so awful, but I figured that if I pulled out the Bible and read it, it'd put me to sleep. You know, I'd be able to go to sleep. And I'm doing the YouVersion Bible plan. That it's called As It Happened. You're going through the whole Bible in a year, and it's actually as the Bible happened. It's not cover to cover. It's just chronological. And I happen to be in 2 Corinthians, and it's where Paul is talking about all his struggles. And I was praying to God. I said, you know, Lord, I need sleep because my church needs my, I owe my church the best. And if I'm not sharp and everything, it will be bad. I need to be sharp. He wasn't giving me any sleep. And I started thinking about how unfair that was. And then I started reading about what Paul went through. And he said, in order to accomplish the gospel, in order to do what God wanted me to do, I received from the Jews 40 lashes minus 1, 5 times was a maximum penalty. He was stoned with, not stoned like, whoa, man, you know, it's like stone, like thrown stones at, trying to kill. He was shipwrecked. He was beaten with rods. He was everything. All this stuff just to go through, just to do the Great Commission. And I just thought to myself, why? Why would someone go through all of that? And it just hit me about what we're talking about today. Do I really need to ask? He wasn't doing this for a faith system or a bunch of beliefs. He was doing this because he loved Jesus. Do I even need to ask you what you'd be willing to go through for the people that you love? Parents, what would you go through to save your child? Do I even need to ask? Parents in here, you all would give up your lives in a heartbeat if that meant that if your child needed you to. In a heartbeat. We don't give up comfort and take beatings and persecutions for a belief system, but we'll do it for someone that we love. Amen? Then you will not understand the actions of the Apostle Paul or the early church, what they were willing to go through, unless you understand that the point of Christianity is intimacy with God and a relationship. That's why they went to the lions. That's why they went to the cross willingly and gladly, because they were doing this to be with Jesus, not to promulgate some kind of faith system of do's and don'ts. It was intimacy with God that drove the early church. It was intimacy with God that drove this ragtag band of 12 people to make Christianity 2,000 years later the largest religion on the earth. Taking it to every nation, every tribe, every country, every group of people. It was intimacy with God that caused them to do that. And we will not understand that until we understand that it is intimacy with God that drives all of that. And we are committed to the same things that Jesus committed to. We grow in intimacy with God of the universe that no law or threat of persecution could hold a candle to. And we experience intimacy with Jesus when we are committed to the same things Jesus is committed to.